This is a special holiday edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today from AgMarket.net include Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Matt Bennett. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Just a quick reminder as we get started that the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, the IFAS series with the agricultural economists from the University of Illinois, are coming up in the month of January on the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. If you've not registered yet, get yourself registered today. Do it right now at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You'll find all the details. This is a morning-long event. It will include Joe Jansen, Scott Irwin, along with Gary Schnitke, Nick Paulson, Jonathan Kappas, and Bruce Sherrick. Should be a fantastic day. We wrap up at the noon hour with your meal. The cost is just $80. Again, online for registration at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's begin our discussion today by asking Matt Bennett, a farmer and the head, a co-founder of AgMarket.net, to talk a little bit about what the growing season was like for 2022. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. How did the 2022 growing season proceed?
Well, you know, for most of us, that are close to the listing area, I guess, right in here in Illinois, obviously, it's good. I mean, Illinois, you look at the 215 state yield that the USDA is talking about, and you understand that Mother Nature was quite kind to us. You know, it was the interesting thing, especially in a state or in one of the states where production was good, is that, you know, you go all the way back to spring time frame whenever you set the spring insurance price at $590, you just climbed all the way into really pollination time frame. But, growing season went really well. Before you got into pollination, though, there was a realization that, you know, we could be looking awfully large crop. And so, you know, from around the 16th, 17th of June, in the next 2 weeks, you know, the corn market actually took like a $1.80 drop. So, you know, most people feel like, hey, we had all these great opportunities. And we did. Fantastic opportunities. But, you know, we did have quite the drop right there in the middle of the summertime frame. But regardless, really good growing season, really good yields and phenomenal income. And I think that's one of the things that makes me a little cautious about 23 is that, maybe the income is almost too good, if you will, to where we may stumble a little bit whenever we're trying to figure out what to do with 23.
So, Wayne Nelson, we got to the middle of the summertime. The price of corn dropped dramatically, and then there was a realization that there might be a short crop out west. Can you tell me about proceeding through those late August, September, and October months?
Well, you know, there was a drought out west. I mean, we looked at the drought monitor daily on every weather map you saw, and by golly, it was dry out there, and it didn't want to rain out there and around the way. And we got timely rains in Indiana. It was very good in respect that we maintained a lot better. But everybody was about 20 bushel less than what they were hoping for because the start, like Matt said, was just tremendous, fantastic. Everybody was thinking maybe we could see 220 in a lot of the farms, 240, 250 in some places. And most of the guys in our area ended up like 200 bushel corn. But, you know, that gained things back. And just the reality of seeing what the weather market could do and what was happening.
USDA, through that process, kept looking at the crop. They kept dropping carryout for a while, at least, on the monthly crop production and world and agricultural supply and demand estimates, Kurt. They picked up 75 million bushels, but that was out of the export market in December. What are your expectations as we hit that January final crop production report?
Well, as we move forward, they'll hopefully get a little bit more handle and fine-tune the production. It's a wide variance of pockets. You take Champagne over to Wayne, that was a drier, they're lower. Matt, he put a little extra in the offering plate and did quite well down there in Windsor. So when you average it all out, there's still a little work to go, but the ideas are the yield's a little better than expected, so production's there. As you hinted on, though, the big question and well-advertised is the demand side. The export side particularly is front and center. The second part of the demand is feed usage. There's true feed usage and there's feed usage, but when we start to hear more and more reports of bird flu and fewer livestock numbers around, that demand might just shrink a little bit and the carryout can maybe grow just a tad bit. But we got to remember, we're early in the marketing season here. As far as the crop year goes, we're not even through the first quarter yet. So there's a lot of demand news in front of us. And probably the first big benchmark we get in January is that quarterly grain stocks report, and we'll go from there.
Now, I want to take up the demand in three places. So I want to talk a little bit about ethanol, avian influenza, and the influence that it has on the livestock numbers. And Matt, with you, the beef cattle and maybe the hogs as well as it relates to consumption. Are you concerned about those figures, all three of you, as we look into that December 1 grain stocks number, which is due out with the January 12 reports?
Yeah, I think feed usage is maybe not where my number one concern is. I mean, I definitely think that you could see a little trimming back there. You know, I think where most people are looking for adjustments to be made is probably not in the stocks. But at the same time, we get all kinds of, neat surprises whenever it comes to these quarterly stocks numbers. So it's really anybody's guess there. I think one of the main numbers I'm watching for whenever we get into the report, you know, might be, what are they going to do with yield? You know, I mean, we actually dropped yield from August to September to October, and then you came in November and actually you went back up. And sometimes whenever you kind of reverse the trend in that fashion, you know, there's an opportunity maybe to see a little more upward bias there. I'm not saying we're going to grow the crop substantially, but I'm with Kurt, and I'm sure Wayne feels similar, that, you know, there's definitely the chance that you could see this carryout grow a little bit. With that being said, you know, it could come either from production or it could come from, you know, maybe even pulling a few more exports out. We've seen a little bit of an improvement here lately. But at the same time, we need to see, you know, kind of a weekly deal where we're actually coming in and maybe surprising the market to feel like we're going to be able to hit that USDA number, because right now we're still running well behind the pace that we need to be able to reach that number. So I guess I'm leaning towards, maybe it'll be a little bit on the, what you would call bearish side, but I don't think I'm the only one thinking that. So with that being the case, you know, I think that, it's going to have to be one of those deals where it's extremely bearish, in my opinion, to really drastically move the market out of this sideways type pattern.
Wayne, if you could take ethanol up and address yield in your area in particular. You were in one of those dry places. Did farmers do better than they expected? And do they think today that maybe they had more in the bin as they've been able to measure it out and go across the elevator than they thought when they pulled it out of the field in October?
They got less than they were hoping for during the early season after they had the drought. When they went to the field, they were happier than they thought they were going to be. We're seeing anywhere from 200 to 210, 215 in that range. And that, you know, was a very good yield for our area. And everything was, they were happy after the drought that they still could put a two in front of their yields that way. You know, a lot of the guys didn't make a record yield, but they were right close to it. And whenever you do that, that's good. Now, one of the things when we're talking about ethanol and that, when the EPA come out with their standards and how they were going to do it, was very disappointing to most of the market, because there's the biofuels and the way they figured it and how they could, the RINs would be generated that way really did not sort of force or continue to control or push the ethanol market as such. You know, we'd love to see, you know, they keep talking about putting E15 in. E15 isn't what we really need. It's got blender pumps. It's too expensive. We're not going to see it. It's sort of like charging stations everywhere they should be if you're going to go all electric. It costs too much. They aren't going to do it and change. What we'd love to see is E12. E12 will work in all the cars for everything that's out there like that. We could kick it up 2%, and we could put 2% more ethanol in every gallon of gas that goes out there. That's what I've tried to talk about, do like that, send a letter to one of my congressmen, and I didn't get a letter back, but I did send it to him. And, we are wanting to do that. We talk with people with the Farm Bureau and everything like that and want to push E12, not E15.
Yeah, so just a review of what U.S. EPA, which now has more control than it has over the RFS, the Renewable Fuel Standard, and the RVO, the Renewable Volume Obligations, than it has since the beginning of this process. It was a continual bill to 15 billion gallons max for corn-based ethanol. It wasn't really listed as corn-based ethanol, or 10% of the yearly consumption of gasoline, whichever was the least, generally speaking. And this time around, U.S. EPA, rather than setting RVOs for just 1 year, sets them for three. That's the new standard going forward. We will not have a final number until we get to the month of June. And I believe what they did this time was to look back at some of the things that took place, relieving some smaller producers, refineries of their obligations, and divided that over a couple of years. So it's 15.25 billion gallons, 15.25 billion gallons, and 15. So they managed to maintain that 15 billion gallon usage, which we can look forward to, I suppose. That's for ethanol. Now let's return to livestock. We'll come back to avian influenza. In the northwestern part of Iowa, in the southwestern part of Minnesota, where a lot of poultry flocks, both chickens for egg layers and for turkeys in Minnesota in particular, are located, do you suppose we have seen very much of the very many of the flocks being decimated by avian influenza, and will that have an impact?
Well, we'll have to watch the numbers here. We got a lot of winter to go, and we'll see how this spreads because, you know, poultry's huge, not only corn, but on the meal side of the equation. And it's probably going to take quite some time to figure that out because what we went through is the end user, particularly the feeder, ended up paying up dramatically going into this fall. Extreme high basis, and you take Western feeders in through there, they're still paying at extreme high basis, and we kind of feel they're kind of booked up for now. So they might have the inventories on hand that they're going to feed at least into the middle of the first quarter here. But it is a major news item. If it does continue, I think it'll probably be the spring reports here. The second quarter, we'll start to see the results of that.
I'll come back to you now, Matt, and talk a bit more about what the considerations might be as it relates to yield in the final crop production figure. Do you think that will change by how much? Illinois, for instance, already at a record 215, where might changes come?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a really good question. I think that whenever you stop and look at it, you know, some of the folks – for instance, that we work with whenever you're in Iowa, there are some places that, you know, there was actually a few piles out there. I know a lot of folks said that just didn't see hardly any piles anywhere, but I don't know that that's the case as far as, you know, everywhere you go. You talk to a lot of producers that say, actually, you know, when it gets right down to it, there's pretty decent yields in some of these areas, but obviously a lot of that corn, you know, started disappearing pretty darn quick because the need for it to move west was so profound, you know, to go west and southwest. And so, you know, my personal opinion is that Iowa could maybe come up just a little bit. The states where yield was good could tick up just a little. I'm not saying we're going to go up a couple bushels, but I can see us maybe going up a half a bushel to a bushel, which certainly is going to make a little bit of a impact as far as the balance sheet's concerned. I still maintain, though, that if you keep this stocks-to-use ratio, anything at 10% or under, you know, it still puts you in a situation where you've got to keep especially these 23 corn for pretty competitive as you move into the spring time frame, because I do think there's a lot of folks that were maybe a little bit hesitant to go heavy on corn acres this past fall, especially with what fertilizer costs and total input costs were going to be. So I've got to think that you're going to need to keep the price of corn from just completely collapsing here, even if you take the carry out up a little bit more than what we've been thinking for quite some time here.
If people, Matt, are already up to where you say they should be, is there a need to market any more corn prior to the January 12 release?
Well, as far as the January 12th release, if they need to go ahead and market between now and then, one thing I've told them as far as cash corn is concerned is look at the opportunity over the next couple of weeks. You know, this weather system coming through could give you a little bit of a bump here as far as your old crop corn goes if you've got the ability to be able to get in there and be able to get your corn hauled out. You know, there's lots of times that, you know, the holiday is already a little bit quiet anyway. Of course, not everyone wants to work over that time frame. But, you know, if you've got the crew and you've got the setup to where you can still make that work, I'd be watching it pretty closely. As far as selling new crop, I think I'd kind of like to see a little bit more what's going to, you know, take place between now. And you got to think you'll get some, again, get a little bit of support, especially going into that crop insurance time frame. We're protected on 50% of our crop at this time. A lot of that was kind of an insurance play, trying to make sure that we want to protect you know, the crop insurance price. But regardless, you know, it was a hedge of prices that we thought was necessary given how strong these 23 prices were.
I think that most farmers in my area are not sold up to the point where you're thinking about on new crop and as far as we're going. Some of them are pretty well sold up on old crop because the basis levels have been so good, and they are taking advantage of them, and they are looking at what's going on out there. The biggest problem we've got now is trying to figure out what Ukraine is going to be able to do and how much corn they're going to be able to put out there with all the war problems that's going on. That is the one thing that's maybe going to help us get back into the export market a little bit there, because they aren't letting as many boats through to get loaded, and they're not before they were stopping them on the way out and slowing them down, but now they're not letting them in as fast. You know, it's going to be a big deal here. We've got to start seeing some sales to somebody else besides Mexico. Mexico has been our biggest customer. They've done well. They're still with us like that. We've got the deal with GMO corn that they don't want to take the next year, which is, it doesn't seem like that will happen to anything but food grade corn, but it's still a fly in the ointment like that. But we do need to see some sales start to take place here to keep this new crop market up.
For the most part, old crops pretty well where everybody wants to be. But on the new crop side, like Matt mentioned, a lot of this pricing has been option strategies, buy and put, sell and call. Not a whole lot of physicals been priced just yet on the 23. And I think the theme going into the 23 is be flexible. We got a lot of world news events taking place. We got a lot of world weather events taking place. And flexibility is the key of the game as we move forward in through here. And if you would go to agmarket.net website, we're having a big seminar in Nashville here first weekend in February. And part of the Ag Market team, Matt, Brian, and Jim, and Bill, and some other special guests are going to cover a lot of different things you can do to protect yourself and give you stuff some flexibility going into the 2023 growing season.
Yeah, so if you want to visit agmarket.net, you can do that. Anything to add about that particular event in Nashville, Matt? I know you've been working to put some of that together.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as Kurt said, several of us within the organization will be speaking there. You know, you got Dave Hightower and Drew Lerner. You've got actually going to be a few special guests. It's kind of interesting with RFD being down there in Nashville. There's the opportunity for those that attend the event to actually go on Tuesday, the day after the event, and watch a live taping there at RFD. Live, it's not even a taping, I guess, but it's live. You know, they'll be able to get in there and watch that. And then, you know, RFD is going to be on hand, DTN is going to be on hand, and Farm Futures is going to be sending someone as well. So we're going to have a lot of media there. It's going to be kind of partaking in the event and seeing what's going on. Actually, we're trying to figure out at this point in time, we've got really good attendance, that we may end up having to upsize our room. So it's going to be a nice location, too. You know, we're actually right there near the heart of everything at the Grand Hyatt. So it's going to be a pretty exciting couple of days.
And I will say that if you've not seen a live television broadcast and watched them do the behind the scenes, and I bet that they'll put you in the control room at some point. That is really something to see, the folks that are actually calling out the camera shots and how it all is pulled off. So that is really an extra little nicety that you've got that on, tacked on to the end of the program. Let's talk about soybeans just a little bit as we go into the end of this year and the beginning of next year. Of course, all eyes really have turned now, Wayne, toward South America. That crop looks like it will be a monster of a crop, even though Argentina is in big, big trouble.
You're right, Todd. It's going to be a big, big crop in Brazil. The Argentine crop would have made it a huge crop in South America, but they're having some weather problems there. They got a little rain here first of the week. Then they didn't get as much rain the next day, and we settled off, and we actually rallied on the lack of rain and the lack of rain coming over the next 5 days in Argentina. But it does look like the areas of Brazil are going to make up for with extra acres and with extra rain and very, very good yield potential there. The one thing is, you know, we're going to watch because Argentina is the largest meal exporter in the world. And will they be able to hold that, or will we be able to pick up some of that meal business?
Yeah, some good points there. But there's still a lot of growing season going, even though Brazil's getting a lot of rain. They may be getting too much rain in some areas. We could talk about Brazilian rust, soybean rust. We can talk about dock strikes. We can talk about port strikes, trucker strikes. So there's some heat cups that can come along in here. But that's what the world's focus on, a larger bean crop. And that's where the focus is. China's going to start moving towards here as we move into 2023.
And of course, the weather will play a big role, not only with the bean crop, but with the corn crop. La Nina is one of the things that Drew Lerner, I'm sure, will be talking about at your event in Nashville as related to whether it's waning and how quickly that happens. And if it doesn't, what it means for the corn crop, that Safrina crop, particularly in Brazil. So that'll be something that we'll be paying attention to. And I know that Drew will be talking about when you get to Nashville in February. Continuing on the vein of soybeans, Matt, demand in the U.S. has been really good with the crush, and then we have renewable diesel, which was part and parcel of the RVO that U.S. EPA put out. They put a number out that the trade was not happy with. In fact, that it pushed the bean market down pretty sharply. From what you're hearing on the ground, will the United States invest, they already are, invest and build, more importantly, the renewable diesel crushing plants?
Yeah, I think that that's something that you're going to see. The trend is going to be much larger crush capacity. I think that one of the things that frustrated maybe some people in the industry, it looks like there's going to be some support to kind of help get the industry up and going, but not necessarily a guarantee that they're going to support the industry for perpetuity. So as we all know, ethanol had subsidies for many, many years, still has some help there. I think there was an expectation that maybe there would be quite a bit of help for the renewable diesel industry as well. But given the demand that you see in some states, particularly in California, you know, and you see that the carbon footprint's, you know, about 75% improvement over normal diesel, then you're going to have a lot of support from the industry, from the public, and from politicians. And so with that being the case, you've got to assume that renewable diesel is going to have its a large impact as you move forward. So I think that it definitely could be impactful as far as what acreage looks like, probably more for 24 than 23. But I do think there's a couple of notables out talking. I think one of them was saying 92 million corn and 88.5 beans. That's pretty close to kind of what I've been thinking here. But I think this might be one of the last years that beans maybe don't overtake corn acres, just because I think that the demand is going to be strong enough. You'll see basis in a situation that's really going to make producers think twice about what they're going to do as far as their cropping decisions once you get more of these plants up and going.
No. As that relates to what cropping decisions should be in 24, 25, 26, and I know this is pie in the sky. Have you been thinking with your producers about how they change their rotations? I assume that it's not so hard in the beginning to put a few more bean acres in, but it gets harder and harder as you have to maybe start to double crop some of those beans.
That would be the truth, Todd. I mean, it's hard to make your decision, but first off, you know, we've kept a pretty blank palette here is to look at, because we are going to look and see what the corn bean ratio is and what's going to be best. And most farmers can switch 10 to 20% of their acreage fairly easy. But if they're going to start switching more, and a lot of guys are 50-50, and when it's 60-40 like that, switching back and around, and what's going to do and what's going to happen, their fertilization program and everything along the way is going to change a lot. I think we're going to see a lot more cover crops if we get into that, as to try to keep it so you can go with more beans.
Come back to this year and the coming crop year. What should producers be doing at this point as it relates to soybeans?
Well, I think you've got to get aggressive and get caught up where you want to be on beans, particularly old crop, when we're looking at a situation where if South America weather turns out sort of favorable, that's going to keep a cap on the market. And then plus two, China, from the shipping point of view, they're going to shift from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere. We'll see our corn business take up a little bit as we shift around on that. As far as new crop goes, I think, like I mentioned, you got to be flexible. I think you come in and have a price floor and kind of see what happens here. And that kind of leaves your upside open. Then as the growing season starts to take place, then you can start laying into some timely cash sales.
I would agree with Kurt on that. I think that that's a pretty good strategy. I am thinking that it is good if we haven't done anything that you at least get up to probably 20%.
Anything on the crop insurance side that you've been thinking about as it relates to next year?
You know, there's going to be some updates. We haven't had our meetings on all of those yet, but I think that, like I said, the cover crops, there's going to be some reduction in cost if you use those, and there's going to be some other things going on and will be happening with some of the new government programs as they go along. And there's going to be some private products that do pop up, but haven't been discussed yet.
Anything to add, Matt?
No, I mean, main thing, I agree with what these guys are saying. I think that whenever you look at pushing $14.23 beans, you know, I don't know that we need to overcomplicate this too much. Or whenever you're talking $15 old crop beans, I know that's not what they are on the board, but in a lot of places, producers have been able to sell $15 cash beans with a strong basis. And so even if they're $14.80, I don't know too many producers that can tell me they've sold very many bushels in their entire farming career at those types of price levels. So, again, I just feel like sometimes maybe we're overcomplicating this a little bit, getting some sales on the books, or at least locking in, I think what Kurt was basically saying, locking in some worst-case scenarios, keeping a flexible plan, I think, is really the way to go. And it sure is nice to see the bean market providing those opportunities for us.
Let's get a final word from each of you now as we wrap up this last edition of the Commodity Week program for the 2022 year. Wayne Nelson of AgMarket.net, your final word for the day.
Well, I think that both of the other guys said it, and I agree with them, that you need to have some coverage here. You need to put a bottom in part of this market. We've got some tremendous prices here, prices we haven't seen in years along the way. And just want to take this chance to say thank you to all the listeners out there. It's been a real pleasure for all the years. I've done this wrap-up show for over 20 years on this date, and it's just a lot of fun. When we see you out in public, stop us and say hi. We really appreciate all of you listeners that do make this show possible.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, 22 was a heck of a run, a roller coaster, emotional. There was some nights that there's quite a bit of activity taking place in the marketplace. And as we look forward into through here with all these world events, I think you got to stay tuned, stay focused, because we don't know what China's going to do. We don't know what Russia's going to do. And we don't know what's going to happen here in the U.S. But for the most part, really enjoyed visiting with everybody this past year, and looking forward to 23, and hope everybody has a safe and enjoyable holiday.
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I just think, as these guys said, it's been a really interesting year, a good year. And I think one of the main things that I'd like to impress upon folks is that, you know, no 2 years are going to be the same. We've had two straight years of just incredible income. And, you know, I think that we need to be, protecting of that and making sure that, we're at least doing something. Doing nothing may not be the best way to go this year. It probably was last year. Some awfully good prices when you got into fall time frame. But really good year in 2022. I think we'll have another good year in 23. But I think that it may take a little bit more. Risk management. So be prepared to do that and handle your business as best you can.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. And there today, you can register yourself for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. The IPA series is on the road again. We'll be in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb on January 10, 11, and 12. The cost is just $80. Registration online at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.